deny their life experience for some social authority. Don't do that. You have that gut instinct where you know something is a certain way, but some authority is telling you differently, and you go to believe that, you're giving part of yourself away. You can't know everybody's motivations that are in this, but you can know yourself. There's a certain moment that you arrive to with Bitcoin where you realize that it's that self-interest that propels you and forces you to fight for the network, to care about it, and to ultimately keep on like focusing on the truth of what's going on. You cycle your fiat into a Bitcoin position through mining it, and you're outside the system. When I worked in rooftop solar, I used to energize customers' homes, and watching people's meters spin backwards was the same emotional response as when people generate their first Bitcoin and it shows up in the wallet. Oh my gosh, this actually worked. I did this myself.
My guest is Kent Halliburton, CEO and co-founder of SaaS Mining, the mining as a service company helping everyday Bitcoiners own their own rigs and receive freshly mined sats straight to their wallets.
Stacey, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
I'm very excited to talk to you today. I want to hear all about your, first of all, your story, but I've heard about SaaS mining and I'm really interested in what you can teach me about that.
Yeah, of course. Where are you located?
I'm in Chicago.
Chicago. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Where are you at?
I'm in Peru.
Oh, you are in Peru right now. I heard that I heard that's where you had your, you know, your awakening. That's where you kind of started your journey in Peru. Is that true?
It's fun. I've never titled it awakening, but it's not an untrue. I guess that's where I discovered Bitcoin. And so, yeah, I guess in some ways that is true. Yeah.
So is that where you stay full time or are you just there doing work?
Yeah, it's home. It's home for me. I'll give you the full story because I've definitely got an unusual life path. So I originally am from Oregon, did a computer engineering background on the central coast of California at a college called Cal Poly that's motto was learn by doing. And that led me obviously into rooftop solar, where I worked for a decade, not obviously at all. It was a very different career, but worked in that industry for about a decade and sort of the top of my game there. I was running sales, software, and post-acquisition integration of companies for a company that was competing with Elon Musk's cousins in that industry. And so needless to say, I was quite burnt out after a decade in that industry and decided to go fulfill a lifelong dream of world travel when the company brought in a new CEO. And I said, yeah, this is a great time to exit. So I spent 2 years basically backpacking and seeing the world and going on incredible life adventures that stay with me to this day. But during that time, I fell in love with a Portuguese woman and Bitcoin. And so life restarted for me in 2016 in Portugal. And at the same time, an entrepreneurial journey kicked off. And I went through quite a few different failed attempts at getting businesses going in Portugal. Lots of red tape, but, you know, tried my hand at shitcoin trading, as I think too many of us do. Tried Bitcoin ATMs, financing through securitized tokens, renewable energy projects, and ultimately Jeff boost the price of tomorrow and realized, what am I doing? Like chapter five was all about roof solar and mining. And I was like, I'm being such an idiot. Like, let me go get into mining. So I heard the founder of SaaS Mining on a podcast. I knew the host. He put us in touch and I joined as an advisor at SaaS Mining and helped the founder raise some capital. And then that capital was not enough to go build the mines that we wanted to build with the capital, but we were able to use that capital to pivot the business to building mining as a service, which actually really scratched my itch, because when I tried to mine from home, like I just was really frustrated with the experience because it was expensive, it was noisy. I just was not conducive to being done from home. And I was like, why isn't there just like a software as a service for this, where I've got my mining rig and it's my Bitcoin, but it sits in somebody else's, you know, data center? Like, why doesn't that exist? And so that's basically what we've built, is kind of the AWS of mining, you know, where we have possession of somebody else's mining rig and we manage it on their behalf. As long as we produce Bitcoin for our clients, then we get paid. And if we don't, we don't get paid. So that's how we aligned incentives.
That's incredible, because so many people want to get into mining and that's the struggle they face. You know, they don't want to have it be noisy. You know, I've wanted to mine Bitcoin myself and I've looked into it, and it's just something where I just figured let me just get a lottery miner. That's good. You know, I'm doing some sort of mining, but I'm not actually mining Bitcoin. But I love that idea that you don't have to actually have it in your home and you host it for the people. So that's a really, really interesting idea. Does that have something to do with when you say skip the exchanges and DCA into Bitcoin the native way? Is that something to do with how people purchase Bitcoin through your services or through what you provide?
Yeah. So I think there's our community actually, this is going to sound weird when I say it, Stacey, but I'm convinced our community has amnesia about mining. And the reason I say that is because if you look at how we acquired Bitcoin since the first block was mined in January, I think it was January 3rd, 2010, everybody that ran the Bitcoin software was mining. There was no separation. So most of the Bitcoin from 2009 to 2013 was all acquired by mining. And if you meet OGs that came from that time frame, you see they have a fondness for mining. It's not this othered thing that we currently have today. And that happened, from my vantage point, largely because Coinbase came along and made acquisition by buying easier. And so there's a split in our timeline around 2013 as a Bitcoin community, where we moved for several reasons. Biggest, I think, was convenience to buying instead of mining to acquire Bitcoin. And so that has actually led to mining centralization issues downstream, because the bulk of the Bitcoin community is not actually mining. And so who is mining? Well, who's mining is people that are publicly traded entities that have a fiduciary responsibility in dollars, using Bitcoin as a proxy to get more dollars. And that is the majority of hash rate on the network right now. And that's leading to mining centralization issues, because if your ultimate goal is to acquire fiat as your money instead of Bitcoin as your money, that's a different incentive set. And so what we've built basically is the solution to coming back to the network, which is try to create the equivalent level of ease for mining as Coinbase does for buying. Now, I know Coinbase doesn't have a good reputation today, but in terms of like where we go to buy, we go to River, we go to Swan, we go to, you know, kind of these other Bitcoin only entities. But, you know, they did sort of spearhead like that easy user experience for Bitcoin acquisition. And that's our aim at SaaS Mining, is to make mining that simple.
Yeah, that's really great. And you do it globally. You can service clients anywhere.
Yeah, so that's one of the really cool parts. The other part, so let me actually just back up. There's sort of this implicit recognition that Bitcoin is a 0-to-1 innovation. And that is 100% true. Fortunately, it's two. And most people don't recognize the second one. So the first one is the decentralized ledger. You know, I can send you value. I'm in Peru. You're up in Chicago. I can send you value. I don't have to worry about borders, anything like that. I know if I wanted to send you a Lightning transaction right now or an on-chain transaction, it would go through. We could do it on camera if we even wanted to. But what most people don't recognize is the second innovation, which is the ability for anybody in the world to print their own Bitcoin. Right? Bitcoin mining is a decentralized money printer. And that is another 0-to-1 innovation, because always we've had centralized money printers, and that has caused so much destruction on our planet, right? As Bitcoiners come to find out as they study what money actually is. And so for us to actually be able to participate and take ownership in the money printer itself is a novel innovation, and providing that access, that is how Satoshi stacked his sats and how the network was designed to distribute tokens.
I love it. Do you feel like for people that have looked into mining that have thought, is it worth it for me to have just one miner, one like S19 type miner or something, people that have looked into that, and then they think about the cost of running it compared to how much Bitcoin they would earn in every month? I feel like these days people say that mining in their home isn't that lucrative, like you're better off just buying it off an exchange type of an idea. So they think that the only way really is if you were able to mine your home with Bitcoin, because then you're saving on energy / earning Bitcoin. So you're saving money in one way. But through your company and through mining that way, is it worth it for people to just have one miner, or do they need to have many miners, or what's the point of where it's beneficial for a normal person to be able to participate in doing that?
Yeah. So the core issue that keeps people away from mining is the price of their power. And that is, to give you a conceptual idea, the average cost of power in the US, the last time I looked, is 17 cents per kilowatt hour. per unit of electricity. Kilowatt hour sometimes confuses people. So every unit of electricity that you purchase costs 17 cents. Right now, you need to be, to make the numbers look good, you need to be under 7 cents. So that means it needs to be, what, 60% lower priced than the average person can acquire. Now, there's ways to get around that. Tyler Stevens, you know, has been really driving the movement for hash rate heating at home to where, hey, if you're going to heat, you might as well pick up some sats on the side. Makes tons of sense for that. But that's also limited in terms of timing, right? Like you don't need heat 24/7 all days of the year. So if you do want to have low enough priced power to make it affordable, then yeah, you need to find a different location, somebody like us, a service provider that can help make that happen. The alternative to that is you can make that happen yourself, but if you price it out what it costs and how much time it takes, we've done those numbers a couple times, and usually it comes to about $5 million in, you know, about 9 months of time. Terms of education, acquiring power contracts, all the necessary pieces that go into it. And it's highly competitive. So that's really our value proposition, is that we've gone and done that for other people. We've gone and found the data center. We found the cheap power. We have the remote hands that are there that can service your equipment for you. All you have to do is purchase the hardware and provide a Bitcoin address and a, you know, credit card, basically, is how most people pay for their electricity on a monthly basis. But yeah, we've built precision or billing, that way you're only billed for the actual electricity that you use, and it becomes the ultimate like cypherpunk way to cycle your fiat into a Bitcoin position, because it's Bitcoin generated right off the network. You know, we call it wild sats because we don't want to talk about being KYC free too much, but in essence it's Bitcoin that's generated outside of the banking surveillance state.
With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup. Simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit. The Bitcoin Advisor helps you understand collaborative self-custody for your Bitcoin and why it's important. Scan the QR code on the screen for more info, or click on my link in the comments. This isn't just fashion, it's Signal. Wear the message and plant the idea. Use my link below for 10% off your order.
That's really something that I want to do. And I want to definitely, I'm excited to share this video with more people. So I hope it reaches a lot of my Bitcoin community on X that might not know about something like this, because we always talk about mining. And I think there are some people who mine at home, but most people run a lottery miner like a BitX, you know. So this is something that just, yeah, brings us back to the beginning, brings us back to actually what Bitcoin is and actually participating in the mining.
I've been trying in the background here, hopefully I haven't been too distracted, to share our screen a little bit, because the core value proposition of what we do has been so lost. And I think that's a function of our industry just not talking about it correctly. So if you go to, is our website, and you can scroll down and see some testimonials here, but you can also see what it costs right now to mine a Bitcoin today. So $81,000 as compared to the exchange price. I've got a block clock here. It's showing me we're about 111,000. So this is Bitcoin for $30,000 less per Bitcoin. And if you look at that, the math right here it surprises a lot of people. We just made it as simple as possible. So it's the daily cost, right? It's $6.76 to run this particular mining rig. We've got three that we're offering. This is the least efficient. So this is the worst of the three value propositions. So $6.76. You generate 8,300 sats. If you divide those, you actually get a cost per Bitcoin. And now you can suddenly compare with an exchange. So that's $30,000 less than the price on an exchange. And the beauty of this is your daily electricity cost doesn't change. Yes, this will go down a bit as difficulty increases, but this is relatively fixed for the life of the equipment that you purchase. And this simple fact of what it costs to DCA into a Bitcoin position through energy most Bitcoiners are completely unaware of it. And I found it really shocking because this is the core value proposition of proof of work that Satoshi designed the entire network around. And this is why I talk about like that collective amnesia that we have. We're so used to pricing Bitcoin in terms of dollars that we've forgotten like how actually Bitcoin is created.
It's related to energy prices. It's not related to dollars, right? It should just be how much energy it costs to run it. We do. I forget about this. I mean, because you just get so taken away. Like, it's almost like getting away from nature, getting away from growing your own food.
Exactly.
The proof of work, you know, you're just removing yourself from that, and you're relying on a centralized exchange or a company or corporation to give you these things that you need, you know, for everyday life. So it just fits so well into just getting back to nature when it comes to mining Bitcoin natively, you know, and actually paying for just the electricity, what it costs to run it. So even if you have to buy the unit, however much the unit costs, you know, as Bitcoin price, we know, will go up over time, you know, so that pays for itself as you're accumulating sats. So I want to know, how much is one of those miners that you showed us? Like, if somebody were to purchase one of those.
Yeah. And I want to be clear on this too, because that is the simplest way you can look at it. That does not factor in the price of the mining rig. There's the price of the mining rig really complicates things. And let me kind of, so simple answer, it's about $4,000. For that mining rig that we were looking at. Now, the thing is that $4,000, that price point, I consider it a ticket to get on the mining ride, because you're going to sell the ticket towards the end of the mining ride. And everybody chooses to do that at sort of a different. And those prices fluctuate depending on the cycle. And so it really complicates things. But the simple way of looking at it is, how much savings do I need to generate to actually get that dollar cost average price? And the answer to that is about 2 to 3 years for most people. So you will save enough in acquiring your Bitcoin through energy that the purchase price of your mining rig, assuming it goes to zero value, will be justified within 2 to 3 years. Most of our clients are seeing that in closer to a year. But the real approach to this is not thinking about it in terms of cash flow, but in the same way that you're going to cycle your fiat into a Bitcoin position on exchange, the same approach to this, right? Just cycle your fiat into a Bitcoin position and hold it. It's going to be worth more, and you're outside the system.
Yeah.
By the way, with those sats as well. So it's
amazing.
Just
a, I love
yeah,
this.
Exactly.
So excited.
Cycle your fiat into a Bitcoin position through mining it, and you're outside the system.
Literally buying, like, if you again relate it to farming or growing your own food, you're just buying the hardware, you're buying the tractor, you're buying the thing that's going to help you. You know, so you have to invest in the equipment to bring you more yield and actually like help you in this farming process, you know. So you need the equipment, it's an investment in your farm, and you benefit from that. You benefit from getting it natively. So this, I did not realize this. Thank you so much. Like, I'm excited that, I don't know if it was how we connected, but I think it was, who is it? Lee from BitVault.
Yeah, Leon. Yeah.
So he asked me if I had interviewed you yet. And I told him that, you know, we're going to be talking soon. And he was just saying, you're an incredible educator. And I was so excited, but I didn't know much about it. However, it was that, I don't know if he told me about you or how we connected. I forget what the podcasts that I do, but this is very exciting. And I just can't wait to share it, because we are all about, you know, decentralization. We're about, you know, not relying on companies or corporations. We're not about ETFs. You know, I know that is a use case for some people that are already tied up in TradFi, and they could benefit from that, you know, from exposure to Bitcoin. I love to think of, you know, my little lottery miner doing something maybe one day and getting mining a block possibly. It's an every 10 lottery. But the thing with this is just, I don't know, it's very exciting. It feels like you are actually doing, you know, the work. You're putting in the proof of work and you're part of this network. So when you, let's say you're, because I don't know how it works, like if it's part of a pool or how it works, but when your rig, if it were to mine a block, how does that work if it were to reach a block? Is that like a pool that all of the rigs do together, or how does that work with the company?
Yeah. Now you're starting to get the intricacies of how mining itself actually works. And I do want to just comment. I love the idea of, I haven't drawn that analogy. I should have, because I grew up on a farm, but you're sort of, it's the difference between eating a store-bought tomato and one that you pulled out of the garden, right? It just tastes different and you get a different sense to it. And it's really interesting because when I worked in rooftop solar, I used to energize customers' homes, you know, when there was the utility said, hey, you're good to go. It's been inspected. Go out there and flip the switch, and watching people's meters spin backwards was the same emotional response as when people generate their first Bitcoin and it shows up in the wallet. Oh my gosh, this actually worked. I did this myself. I think it's exactly the same as farming your own vegetables or food source, you know, or hunting your own game. Like all those sort of things have like a similar sense of like, I did this, you know, for myself. And so I think there's value in that for us as people to do that. Now, in terms of your question, which I've now lost track of.
About mining a Bitcoin.
Like the pool.
You hit a block. Well, I think we cut out. Hold on 1 second. Okay, I think we just came back. I think it cut off for a second, but we're back.
Yeah. Okay, we're back. So we don't do solo mining, right? So you're not mining by yourself. So we have two pools, Luxor and Ocean, that are available to our clients. And Ocean, is at the time of this recording, we have finalized beta testing, and we should, by Friday of this week, have it live so all of our customers can use it as a choice. And both of which are set up so that you are participating with other miners to collectively share the rewards that pool receives. Mm-hmm. So that happens automatically. So the amount of work that you put in as an individual contributes to the amount of shares that you receive from the pool. And then whenever a block is found, that determines the price per share and you're paid out accordingly.
Okay. So are you alerted when it mines a block, or do you just see it show up? Like let's say collectively you mine a block, like does it just show up in your wallet, or do you get any sort of notification that it was hit in a pool?
Yeah. And you just see, so like there's a difference between Luxor and Ocean. So Luxor is, you're going to see the pool actually pays out statistically what you should receive based on the average of the network. And so you see consistent rewards accumulating until a threshold is reached, and then you're paid out. That's how Luxor works. Ocean is a bit different. Ocean says, look, we're going to get rid of this steady payout and instead just pay you exactly what your work entailed when we receive a block. And so that's a bit more erratic, but you can, in the same way, see those rewards accumulate and bump up every time a block is found. And right now, Ocean has been finding 1 to 2 blocks per day. So the reward payout has actually gotten quite regular.
Wow, that's mind-blowing to think about, just to think about how much more, you know, to split between however many miners find that. You know, it's nice to see that it could be more than what you showed, like the 8,000 sats a day, you know, it could be more than that based on, you know, if you get to split a Bitcoin or a block, I'm sorry, like a block reward, not a Bitcoin, it's 3.5 Bitcoins, right? So yeah, so that's super crazy. I just love this. This is just my, I love that I've been in Bitcoin since 2020. And I think of myself as, you know, pretty educated in Bitcoin. I've probably put in over 10,000 hours just with the constant studying and reading, but I just didn't know about this. So this is, you learn something new every day. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, do you know between, what is it, Ocean and what was the other one?
Luxor.
Luxor, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what, like with this whole Core and Knots thing, do you guys run off of a certain software, like a client, or what do you guys?
Yeah,
do
what have we chosen? Yeah, so Ocean is different in that we needed to set up our own nodes and we need to use the Datum server. So we don't have it down to the client level, but we have it so that in each of our data centers, each data center is creating the block template that the miners in there, the customers in that data center, will use to work to create a block for the network. And we chose Knots to run that implementation over Core. My primary reason for that is not specifically technical so much as looking at the argument from a very high level. I've been in Bitcoin since late 2015, and it does not make sense to me the steps that Core is doing when there's something so contentious. I've never seen this or experienced it in my history, and I don't want to impute motives as to why they would choose to do something that is as contentious as it is, but it strikes me as aberrant behavior And I would rather hedge myself by running yachts here than by running core.
That makes me happy to hear, because I have seen these debates back and forth trying to understand it myself. And I know that people try to talk about why it seems like more of a, when you think about people's incentives or when you think about just the behavior behind and almost like the forceful way that it was just said, this is what we're doing because we're the majority. So I like that you're saying that, because I think much of my community is like my ex community that we're all part of this Bitcoin army. We agree. We kind of just see that it seems fishy, like something is just not right about it. But it also kind of bothers me that a lot of Bitcoiners that have been around for a very long time are supporting this, you know, this bloat in the Bitcoin, you know, blocks, I guess, or in the data, in the transactions, I guess, volume. You know, I'm not like the most technical person, but I understand that they want to increase that so that more transactions can be allowed on these blocks. It worries me in a way, because I love the idea of what you're doing. It's like decentralizing, going back to, you know, the roots, going back to mining yourself and not having some centralized, you know, exchange to buy the Bitcoin from. So that whole idea I was kind of hoping lined up with Knots, because I actually am the admin of a community called the Paranoid Bitcoin Anarchists. And it's just supposed to be just a funny name, because we're not like crazy. I think of anarchy as like the peace symbol and the anarchy symbol just spinning around. So that's, it's not like we're like, you know, angry people. We're just a peaceful revolution type of thing.
You seem super angry. I'm just going to tell you, Stacey.
Yeah, but with the whole paranoid angle, I'm glad that you said that, because I'm actually hosting my very first space tonight for the Bitcoin army with my own paranoid angle on it. And I just find the timing very interesting when you think about how the US government was spamming or like putting economic data onto the blockchain recently. They just announced that they were going to be putting all this economic data, which is considered more spam on the blockchain. And it just made me wonder about timing. I think when I think of incentives and timing, I'm just thinking about how Core wants to increase this and the US government's pouring all this data into the blockchain to make more of a reason for why Core should implement this. And it just makes me wonder that I have all these suspicions. Well, I don't know.
So let me go tinfoil hat on you for a second here and tell you about an experience that I had that has very much colored my perspective and it made me highly conservative. So first, let me just explain what I think is the core value that brings Bitcoiners together. I believe it's the separation of money and state, and that this is a monetary system, full stop. And so I look at it as what advances Bitcoin as money, which has store of value, medium of exchange, and unit of account properties, is where I'm going to position myself, right? Everything else to me does not matter, because ultimately, if it doesn't prove itself as money, then we don't get the separation of money and state, which has been a Achilles heel of the human species for 5,000 years. That's where my bias is, full stop. I ran, when I lived in Portugal, a Bitcoin-only meetup. It was outside of Lisbon in the Sintra area, which may or may not mean anything to listeners here, but it's a green area, kind of countryside-ish sort of place. So it was a small, like podunk type of a meetup. You know, we'd get like probably 4 or 6 people to get together. We'd break bread and talk about Bitcoin. It was a cool event, right? It was the only one in Portugal at this time, probably 2019, 2020 sort of time frame. So it was pre-COVID. And I remember running this for probably 4 to 6 months, and a young dude showed up, probably like mid-20s, to one of the meetups, and got to know him a little bit and asked what his background is and story. I mean, small group, right? And he tells me he works for a 3-letter agency, and I start to inquire, which one? What are you doing? And he couldn't tell me. That it was a closely guarded secret. And I just ended by telling him, like, look, man, I'm glad you work for a 3-letter agency. I'm glad you came to Podunk Sintra countryside meetup, Bitcoin only meetup. You can see we're doing nothing nefarious. Can you please leave now and never come back? This is my meetup. Yeah. And he did. But it was like one of those sort of like ripples in the pond for me, because I realized, okay, here's this American guy. I mean, it was an American 3-letter agency, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm in Portugal, mm-hmm. that is scouting out this Bitcoin only meetup in the countryside in Portugal. And I'm like, okay, how many more three-letter agency activities are happening in our community.
Right.
I don't know, yeah, but it definitely put me into a paranoid camp. And I look at everything that's going on now, like through that lens. It's like, okay, I know there's all these crazy CIA like operations that have occurred throughout our history as an American people that have toppled nations and done all this stuff. Like, who am I to say that that's not occurring to our community? And I would be an idiot to think that it wasn't. So let me just keep my tinfoil hat on. And yeah. I don't want to ascribe any motive to what CORE is doing. I'm not saying that right. is occurring there. I can just say I can't not know. I can't prove that either direction. And so I just have to be paranoid about it all and just say, look, man, I'm just going to go 30,000 foot view. Look at your guys' behavior. It doesn't make sense to me. I think most Bitcoiners have come to that conclusion and are saying, I don't care how much gaslighting or whatever you want to tell me about what you're doing. It's contentious. We can see it's contentious. If it's contentious as a Bitcoin community, we just agree we're not going to do it. And the fact that you're still doing it, that's the issue for me.
Right. Yeah, I love that you say that because you're right. It does make you feel paranoid and you do look at it like it changes the way you kind of think and you want to remain paranoid because you're right. It was a 6-full meetup. Like not many people were there and there was somebody from there checking out what you were doing. It's very strange. And that's what made you think if it's my little meetup across the world that somebody's looking into and seeing what's going on here, how many others are being monitored or trying to infiltrate, let's say, or trying to change narratives. And we all know the way that media controls narratives and changes things based on how they want to continue to control people. And with Bitcoin becoming so mainstream now, and it's now adopted by, you know, Wall Street and it's just infiltrating everywhere. But it seems like it just feels weird to me. That's why I think, again, I'm not saying that CORE is there's people in CORE that are connected to the government or something like that. Like, I definitely think Bitcoin can help governments and change the toxicity in the way that money has been working all these years. I really think it could reshape our government and be better. So I'm not saying like no to politics. I just think politics, the way they've been, need to be reshaped by Bitcoin. So I'm not against politicians or politics. I just think we need a new form of that because everything is just based on lies right now. But just knowing that it just seems weird to me when I look through that paranoid lens like you had is just hearing about that news about the timing of this economic data pouring onto the blockchain right as we're having this debate between if CORE is right or not, and as they want to increase that and change over with their update, you know, coming soon. It's just weird because it's like the government is sort of saying, look, we're putting all this info on there, now you need to do it. You know, it just seems like with like some sort of thing, like they're working together. So I just can't say that it's true. I know that it's just me being paranoid, but I would rather, because it doesn't hurt to run knots. It's a CORE, it's still, you know, I downloaded it myself and it's CORE and it's, but it says knots, you know, so it's not hard to switch over. It's not like a whole, like a fork in Bitcoin. Like, I don't know. I know people know that, but I just think that I'm just happy to hear that what you're doing. And I like that you have that, you know, that paranoia, because I don't think of paranoia as a bad thing. I think of it as critical thinking, you know?
Yeah, so I agree. And I think honestly, one of the things that Bitcoiners should give themselves more credit for is that we are, as a community, collectively, we value, and you can see this in the Myers-Briggs personality assessments, right? Like most of us in the community are INTJ or INTP, which are our personality types that are more attuned to truth over social cohesion, right? Like we will be disagreeable in order to stay on point with what we perceive the arrow of truth is in a situation. And I think you don't have to be overly technical here. Like if you like, I like this analogy of there's generally two types of constitutional scholars in the US, right? Mm-hmm. There's a set of lawyers that goes for the letter of the law when they interpret constitutional law. And there's the set of scholars that goes for the spirit of the law. And I don't think you have, bringing that analogy to Bitcoin, I don't think you have to be in the code and letter of the law in order to actually be spirit of the law and what we're up to. And I think a lot of the letter of the law scholars, the coders, tend to think that because they understand that they understand the spirit of the law. And I don't think that those two necessarily conflate. And I think that there are some people that cross into both that understand both the code and the spirit of the movement. And those few are few and far between, and we should definitely look to them and listen to them closely. I think of those people as like the tribe of elders, sort mm-hmm. of in our community. But I think that you can't feel confident in understanding what this movement is about and read the tea leaves without having to be super technical. And I know the technical people will come after me and think, you're an idiot. You can't do this. Like, you can't be that way. And by the way, I will tell them, I'm a computer engineer. Like, I can actually do that because I actually think the spirit of the law is more important than the letter of the law. And I can be that technical as well if you want me to be. But I don't think it's necessary. And so I just say that to encourage people to trust themselves and trust what is true in this community, because at the end of the day, like, this network is ours. And I gave a talk, I gave it last in Riga, about why Bitcoiners must mine. And one of the things that I end with in that conversation is a picture of the Milan Cathedral. It took 600 years to build that cathedral, 589 to be exact. I don't want to be accused of rounding up too heavily, but it took 589 years to build that cathedral. And I cannot think of a single project that is ongoing right now that we have that type of time horizon to complete. And everybody that's in Bitcoin should have that time horizon, because that is our project. Bitcoin is our Milan Cathedral. And if we don't have a time horizon that's that scale, we're missing the forest for the trees. And I think if you're going to have that sort of time horizon, you have to be pretty conservative and hardcore that this network is only about money. Okay, maybe in 300 years, we can talk about it being about something different. Once we've separated money and state, maybe at that point, we could have that conversation. Otherwise, mm-hmm. to me, right here and now, it's an absolutely meaningless conversation, and it's a diversion. And frankly, yeah. I find it to be stupid.
Right. I love that you said that, because I think of you as one of those elders then, because you could think of that, you know, that side of it where you have that intuition, but then you could also talk about the technical aspect of it. So you're one of those people, one of the rare ones. But I've been not to say the word accused, but I've been called out before when I've mentioned how I see, like you said, in 300 years, it's a different story. But like right now with what's happening, I think if CORE would have been the majority, you know, stayed under the radar, not tried to push through any kind of changes like this for, let's say, another 30 years, 20 years, I don't know, longer than now, it would have gotten so much bigger that it would have been harder for other clients to run on Knots or any other one, because it would have just gotten so polarized. I don't know, it's something like that, where it would have been harder to kind of fight back, if you will, like to just have it be more decentralized as far as node clients, if that's even the right way to say it. But I was mentioning my idea, my feeling about it, you know, the whole whatever you called it, like the intuition behind what's happening here. And I just said, I felt like these are the beginnings, just how Bitcoin mining started off with a couple computers. And then now you have this, I don't want to call it a war, but a node war in a way. Like, it seems like because this happened now at this time where Knots is able to kind of rise up and other clients could go and run their own node, and it could be like a decentralized beginning, like a forest growing, like more, instead of one tree being the majority, it could be more trees growing up, and everything is getting more decentralized when it comes to this. So it was just my idea. It was just my feeling of how things, this is like the beginning of how we stay decentralized, because more smaller node runners will just do this, and it won't just be one major one that everybody follows. And I think people were, or somebody said that you need more than intuition here. It's more than that. And I know I'm not the most technical person. I can't describe it in computer terms, but I just don't feel it. You know, I feel like it just seems strange, and just like how you have that same feeling. So I like that you brought that up too, because it doesn't mean just because you're not, I don't code for a living, you know, that's not what I grew up learning. It doesn't mean that we don't feel something is wrong, you know, or we shouldn't just try to keep it decentralized, because that's what Bitcoin's all about. So
yeah, no, and I think here's the thing. Ultimately, if you can't understand things in a common sense way, which I don't think CORE has been able to effectively communicate, if you can't bring something down to a five-year-old's level and educate the masses on it, it means you don't really understand it. And that's what I see on the CORE side that really has me worried, is it just feels like, hey, I'm going to talk at this level because something is missing, right? And if you can't reach me at this level, then it's you that's the problem. And to me, that's like a form of gaslighting, frankly. correctly.
Yes.
You need to be able to communicate your stuff at this level to get the common sense idea across. That's part of where I think that the gap is coming from. But actually, I'm incredibly hopeful right here. And the reason why I'm so hopeful is because this is the incentive set of Bitcoin playing itself out. There are enough Bitcoiners out there that I believe the Knots actually represents the intransigent minority, right? That is just going to be like, hey, this is about money. You're going to dilute the value of my money if you do this action. So therefore, I am going to repel it. This is like the immune system of Bitcoin, like waking up. And yes, there's Knots, but there's also other versions of Bitcoin that are being talked about, other implementations. And frankly, just like you described, I think that's what we actually see. That's the net recourse of the immune system of Bitcoin awakening here. I think that Core is coming at it from this angle. Okay, great. You guys do you. But guess what? The network doesn't necessarily agree with that. And now there's three or four implementations. And that will lead to more challenges. I can assure you it will. But at the same time, that's how Bitcoin protects itself. The social layer protects the Bitcoin network. And so I'm not actually as worried about it as I see some of the Knots people being, that we're all going to die and Bitcoin's going to lose its value and all this stuff. Right. What I see is that technical solutions are going to be pushed forward. The community will coalesce around those, and Bitcoin will continue to go forward as an immutable ledger with a decentralized money printer protecting it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I love that because it's so many of us, whether it's the ones that aren't the technical ones and the ones that are, that there's so many of us out there that even if Core wants to say, you know, this is the consensus, you're going against consensus. Well, that's just for now. Core seems to be the consensus. But as Knots is rising and more people are finding out about this and thinking the same thing me and you are, that it's overcomplicating it. They're not able to simple, like it's like that whole keep it simple, stupid thing. Like you know, and it reminds me of, I think somebody posted a video. I don't know if you've ever seen The Big Short.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So somebody redid that, but with Knots instead. So the scene where Margot Robbie's in the bubble bath and she's explaining this whole housing thing. So she just said that the way that the bankers and the financial people like to explain things in a really complicated way, so you don't know what they're talking about, you get bored and you just let them do what they do. So you just don't care because it's too complicated. So that's how she explained what's happening here, because she goes, people just, they overcomplicate it. So you just get bored by it and you don't pay attention. You walk away. But it's similar. It's very similar to the way that that was happening. The mortgage-backed securities, they were just making it seem like this great thing because it was so, they didn't even know the details themselves. They were just trying to make it sound so technical. And that's what I think is crazy. It's like, if you can't simplify it, then you're trying to just gaslight people. You're trying to like talk your way and try to confuse people to make it seem like you don't know as much as me. So that's why I'm, you know?
Yeah, no. And I think there's something to that. And perhaps even in the American identity. So I'm going to go a little bit cultural. So I've lived outside the US for a decade plus now at this point, speak a couple different languages, and I find culture really fascinating. My favorite author out of the US is Mark Twain. And one of the things, if you ever read much Mark Twain, is he writes in very, very simple words. And I appreciate him for that. He was the first stand-up comedian in the U.S. Like, he literally would go on tour and do like stand-up comedy across the U.S. And very few people know it, but if you read some of his literature, you will find him to be pretty entertaining. But the point I bring this up is that even the most sophisticated people that have incredible grasp of like English language, they don't have to speak that way. They can bring it down to communicate and transmit ideas. And to me, that's always a red flag when you see somebody that is speaking at this level. Okay, sure, if you're all, you know, educated people on a specific topic and want to go super niche, like, great, talk in that language. But otherwise, why? Like, if you're trying to communicate an idea, there's no need to it.
Yeah, and then you make people feel like they're stupid because they don't know as much as you and you're smarter. So that's that whole, it's just not a genuine, it's like, I don't know, that like my husband or some of my friends call it the bullshit detector. Like, it just makes you feel like, you know, you just hear that and you're just trying to put me down so you can sound better. That's like, that personality type is something that you find, you know, as a red flag. You know, you're just, it's not genuine, you know, it's just it's toxic, you know. And I get, we're all like, we call ourselves toxic maxis, but I think that's like very much a toxic way to convince people or you know, I don't know, it's the perfect word is gaslighting, I think. So it just made me happy. I love that you agree 100%. And I love that you have that angle that you view the world. And I love that you brought up Mark Twain and you, you know, you love him in his writing because he can make an incredible story and not have to have, you know, big words and crazy vocabulary to kind of say, look what a great writer I am. The story is what matters, you know? So I love that you brought that up too. That's a really good connection to just how people speak. You know, it's, you don't have to be the smartest person to convey a message. And that's why I hope so many more people watch this. I can't wait to share it because, you know, you explain things in a really good way. This is what I want to hear. I want to hear people that can get the message across and why without talking for 30 minutes straight about technicals, you know, because this is what matters. This is what gets through to people, you know, even if they're technical or not. I think this is what will actually clear things up for them. So I appreciate that about you and how you speak. And that's one of the reasons why you're a great educator, because you could do it this way, but you could talk numbers and code if you need to. So that's really incredible.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. I just think it's really important that the social layer of Bitcoin grows, because ultimately that's the only thing that can truly protect the network. And I do believe it's inevitable that it will protect the network. That is, to me, the ultimate thing that Satoshi did is he harnessed human self-interest. Mm. And he did that because every single actor that is on the Bitcoin network, if they work to exploit their own self-interest, the network itself grows and is propelled forward. And to me, that's the reason why Bitcoin is inevitable and has to be fought for. I see those as one and the same side of the, they're different sides of the same coin, but they're still the same coin, which is why for me, it's almost, there's a matrix-like quality to participating in Bitcoin. It's kind of like, you know, there's a certain moment where this is going to sound super like I'm talking myself up as like something that I'm not, but there's an image I have right now in my head, you know, where like Neo suddenly realizes he can see like the matrix and like all the bullets just drop to the ground. I feel like there's a certain moment that you arrive to with Bitcoin where you realize that we're all in this because we're chasing our own self-interest. And it's that self-interest that propels you and forces you to fight for the network, to care about it, and to ultimately keep on like focusing on the truth of what's going on. And when you arrive at that point, it's like, okay, this is where I'm spending my life force. This is what I'm doing, because I'm going to plant that seed so that that tree grows and my grandkids, my great-great-grandkids are going to sit under it. Like, I don't see anything that's more noble or worthy of my time and life force than doing that thing. So like, of course, I see it as inevitable, but I also see that I have to fight for it too.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think it's so important to you know, show that sort of a personality when you present yourself even online, because so many people are, like you said, a lot of people that fight for knots or defend Bitcoin that way, but it gets defensive because, you know, when they hear someone talking down to them a certain way or calling them, they want to defend themselves publicly so they don't look like they're being made a fool of or something. But sometimes when these people talk negatively the way they do or write things back to what you post, so if you share something speaking your mind about why you don't think this is right, why you want to run knots or whatever, you can speak your mind about it. I think it's good, important for people to share their ideas and thoughts in a simple way to let more Bitcoiners know how they feel. But if people are responding negatively, it's almost like, don't waste your time on it, you know, because it's just, you know that this immune system you talked about, you know, that's Bitcoin defending itself. That's Bitcoin rising up. More people seeing what's going on and understanding what's happening. That's a healthy thing that's happening to Bitcoin right now. And so I think that it's important to share these ideas, but then not waste your time defending it. I mean, it's okay. I think it's kind of funny when people do. I like to read the threads too and just see what people say. I'm not saying not to do that, but I'm just saying don't get overconsumed by trying to like stress yourself out defending it. Let them speak, and then people can see the difference between how you share your thoughts and why it's important, and then all the chatter that's going on below that, and how it just shows the personality of the person attacking. Because it's almost like when you're attacking, it reminds you of how too much control when government tries to attack. And I think it just shows its true colors that way. So I think you could see which one is the real one by not trying to constantly engage with the toxicity, I guess, because we know it'll be fine. You know, I think
that's very, very wise advice, Stacey. And I fully endorse it. I have I think is one of the things that I've realized as I get older is I start to build frameworks around how I see certain events and experiences. Mm-hmm. And my general framework on social media is, if you're not in my inner circle, I really don't care what you have to say. I'm mm-hmm. sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, you might be an influencer in our community. That's great. But at the end mm-hmm. of the day, and that might affect like business and profession and that sort of thing. And mm-hmm. so, okay, maybe I'll take that with a grain of salt. But at the end of the day, if you're not in my inner circle, like, you know, 15 like close people that really matter to me, you know, go yeah. pound sand basically. Like, right. I don't really, I'm kind of got a Joe Rogan sort of idea of like, don't read your comments. Like, don't yeah. worry so much about what other people are saying online mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, you know, it's the people that are close to you that matter. And yeah, their opinions do matter. You should mm-hmm. listen to your loved ones. But, mm-hmm. you know, the social media, I think maybe I'm just also somewhat biased because I grew up in and remember an era before it really existed. Mm-hmm. And I still have that sort of mindset where I genuinely try not to talk unless I have something that I want to say. And at mm-hmm. the same time, I don't really care what people say in the comments. Okay, find it interesting, but don't take mm-hmm. it so personal. I yeah. think is generally good advice online.
Yeah. And I think that it's one of those things where, you know, you are just trying to, you know, to share your ideas, but you don't need to take it personally because they don't know who you are. You know, they don't know what you're about, but it also kind of means you're winning. So I think when people are like, some people are, when they talk about knots, even in my community, they say, I kind of feel like they're looked at as sort of a leader about talking about this issue. And they kind of are getting to the point where they're getting too much attention. They say, everything I say now, I'm getting 10,000 impressions, and it's like everyone's, you know, almost attacking or supporting or attacking. It's just too much attention. And I'm like, that just kind of means that yeah, you're getting positive support, but you're getting people attacking. But it just kind of means you have something important to say where, you know, yeah. people are looking at it now and people are caring about what you're saying. Don't worry about the negativity. You obviously are people are engaging for a reason because this is something that matters. And I think it is angering people when they don't fully get it. So I just think it's just, you're going to get hate along with love when you're spreading an important message. It's never going to be just, everyone's going to think you're right. So I think you just have to look at it like, share your voice, share what you think is right. And if you get some hate for it, it's kind of natural, just ignore it, you know? So that's a great point too.
Yeah. I think, what is it? Bob Marley said, you can only please part of the people part of the time.
Oh yeah, that's true. But it shouldn't mean you should be afraid to share your ideas.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's so, yeah, that's why we do it, because it could resonate with people. And that's why I do this. And that's why I'm happy to have, you know, somebody like you on, because you can, even if it's any number of people that can be affected by hearing this is so important, you know, because that could, you know, spread, you know, it could spread and increase the immune system of this Bitcoin system. So, so I can't wait to share about the mining, because that is something that, knowing more about who you are and knowing what your ideals are and knowing that, you know, you just look at things from the lens that you look at it, it's not in a negative, paranoid way. It's in a critical thinking type of way. And you're just, you have to keep that sense of what people's incentives are and also just kind of defending yourself. You know, it's like just like you thought about the three-letter person at your six people get together is just such a something that'll stick with me, because there's eyes kind of everywhere. And yeah. And then sometimes when I think about bigger names in the space, when I almost wonder if, because they're looked at as such leaders in the space and they maybe have made connections with people that are in core, they almost have to defend it. So you almost sometimes can't trust the biggest name, because maybe they have incentives to, you know what I mean, to almost defend that because they're friends or made, you know what I mean? Just because there's so many people in the Bitcoin community over the years, they probably made friends with that. You know what I mean? They trust their friends, but you just don't know who's lurking in the background trying to manipulate things, I guess. So I just
I just think that there's one core thing that I see people do too frequently in life, which is they deny their life experience for some social authority. Don't mm-hmm. do that. Whatever your experience is in life, figure out how to incorporate that into your worldview, because that is the definition of where gaslighting comes from, is where you have that gut instinct where you know something is a certain way, but some authority is telling you differently, and you go to believe that. You're giving part of yourself away in that. So stay true to yourself, just mm-hmm. fundamentally, and let your inner compass guide you in this type of a debate. Because I think that you can't know everybody's motivations that are in this, but you can mm-hmm. know yourself.
That's perfect. That is such a Oh my gosh, that's the perfect way to just close that and just like, I don't know, tagline it or just have it just be something that people need to remember about how to just be true to themselves and follow your instincts, because there is always a little voice inside of you telling you what's right. And I think people just kind of ignore that because they have obligations or, you know, whatever the reason is. So that inner voice is so important. So thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate your time. And I love that we're able to connect across the world like this. It's amazing. And I am looking forward to reaching out to you about starting my own Bitcoin mining, because this is something I'm very excited about. So I can't wait.
Awesome. We'd love to help you, Stacey. And this has been a fun conversation. Thanks for getting to ask some questions about the perspective that I'm passionate about, but haven't talked about too much publicly. So thanks. And looking forward to staying in touch.
Yes, thank you. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for watching the Bitcoin Nova. As Kent said, stay true to yourself and let your inner compass guide you. You can't always know everyone's motivations, but you can know your own. Use my referral link below for $50 off your own rig with Saz Mining. And you could also create your own referral link to share with others. I'll see you next time.